Everybody, thanks so much for listening to the Cooligans. In the first segment, we got Henry Bushnell. He is telling us all the real tea about what's going on with Pochettino and Pulisic. Oh, it is a lot. And also, we talk about some of the players that are really rising up levels. We got great players like Malik Tillman, Christian Polanco, and Alexis Guerrero. Oh, my God.
Yes, and also, we talked some Gold Cup. We talked about Mexico. I guess la República Dominicana, DR, making a statement at the Gold Cup. Mexican fans quite surprised that the Bachateros gave them a competitive match. We also talked to them Club World Cup and look at some of the transfers that have happened already this window. All this and more today on the Cooligans. So on Saturday, I got to host an incredible event in the Bronx at Bronx Brewery for Dominican Republic against Mexico. Alexis, you were there.
It was an absolute party. First of all, you did an amazing job hosting.
Thank you very much. It was a it felt like a culmination of everything we've sort of been doing for the last 10 years.
It's in a weird way, all of the efforts we've put into pushing Caribbean football on people who don't probably care, you know, us crashing the servers when Goa played DR, you know, in CONCACAF Nations League early on. All these things of like a Dominican and a Cuban starting a soccer podcast that drives people insane when they hear about it. All of that in one room felt like a check had been like, all right, you did it. We had a group of, I'm in the audience, you're hosting, and I'm seated amongst, what, about 150 people? Mostly rooting for DR. There's one small table for Mexicans. Uh-huh. And what an amazing time. What an absolute, and for DR to play as good as they did, bro, you have to be so, I don't even know how happy you must have been on the way home.
There was a, look, I would have been happier if it was a draw or a win, but it
you couldn't have possibly thought that that was a possibility. Honestly, the game was 3-2. The event was lit. Everyone was going crazy. People cheering for even just good defensive moves. It was, that had to still felt like a victory.
I feel bad for the Dominicans that were there in attendance. And that may have been their first soccer experience. First, maybe game that they watched or really thing that any game that they really, really cared about, because that was a party. The Merengue Típico band playing at halftime. The DJs, the dancing, there was just so much that was not typical of a watch party, of a soccer watch party, that I'm happy for you, but I'm also sad for you because you may not ever experience something like this again. So that my hope is that this set a precedent.
Yeah.
For
what if this is the beginning? What if this is the beginning of this?
This is how soccer should be experienced. It felt just truly unique and special, and it's been awesome seeing the feedback from about the event, about just the team, and we'll talk more about later on the show about Mexico, what it meant for their fan base. Yeah. They were also pretty shocked.
But I think I think there's a, you know, for me, when I was there, I looked at my wife and I said, one, this is a culturally significant moment for the sport of soccer in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. You know, just that's it. This is a watershed moment. It felt to me as much of a cultural shift being there. You know, someone playing the huido and like the drums and people dancing and merengue at halftime and people just dancing in general and having a good time. And the guy behind me, he's like, you know, screaming. I think he used to play for the national team or he played in DR. He's friends with Fania, who was on our show. And he's yelling things in a very distinct Dominican way where I'm like, I've never heard people speak about soccer this way. That to me, remember when we went to Atlanta for the first time and we were like, yo, soccer is enveloped like in the donut hole, you know, of surrounded by this hip hop culture in a way we had only ever dreamed of.
Right, right. Soccer and chicken and waffles.
Bro,
you don't pair.
Again,
you don't pair
in Harlem,
those.
But I'll let it go. this in a way that no one has ever duplicated. We tried to do that on the show. Atlanta was like a culmination, like it coming to fruition of that. And that to me was like a big watershed moment in the world of soccer fandom. This was another one. Like I cannot play it down. This was like, I like I said to my wife, like, I could cry. I wish there was a Cuban fan base that was a little more tolerable than some of the folks in Miami, that where I could experience this myself. You know what I mean? In a moment of joy.
Yeah. Look, the game, the moment shocked everybody. Like, even after I was talking to Jonathan Fania, because remember when he did the show, he was like, you know, I don't expect much against Mexico. Like, if we just don't get blown out, that maybe that might be a pretty good result. But even there was a surprise and a joy in his face when I told him, I was like, qué partido, and like, what a game, right? And he was like, yeah, like, just in shock. And he played for the national team for years, and he was just as like overjoyed. It really felt like it was more than just about than soccer. Given Dominican Republic's first time ever in the Gold Cup, and all these kind of narratives, these are a bunch of baseball players and blah blah blah, and it's like, yo, they legit balled out against Mexico.
You should have walked away proud. As proud as I was that you got the chance to be on stage for a moment like that, we as Cooligans, man, we always hope that when a moment like that happens, we just get to be involved somehow. And to see you on stage, just even when goals were going in, you go jumping around on mic with like hugging your family and friends and new friends. It was a beautiful moment, man. I got a bunch of video that I got to send you.
Thank you. Yeah. So, shout out to everybody who made that happen. Ivan Gaton, who was the one who put it all together. Denos is their company and stuff like that. And yeah, a lot of people are generally saying, they're like, in 3-4 years, like, as for when it comes to CONCACAF, like, DR could be in the conversation for like making the World Cup and being in that, being the Jamaicas of the world and Trinidad, and you know, that actually can do something.
And maybe more dual nationals decide to play for the team, you know, which I think always helps lift the team.
That's
up.
What this show, this going forward, this show is going to be a propaganda arm of the Dominican Federation.
We've been talking about third party ownership for a minute. Can you do that for a national team? Because we need to get paid off this.
I'm trying to get everybody and anybody involved. Yeah. All right. Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerreros.
I'm in this little box in here today because I'm a little under the weather.
You're a little sicky poo.
All right. Partied a little too hard with Dominican Republic in their game against Mexico. But a lot to go over today, because we're going to be joined in just a little bit by a guest, a writer for Yahoo Sports, the one and only Henry Bushnell, to talk about the U.S. men's national team, their recent match against Trinidad and Tobago, and a little bit of the drama that's going on with Christian Pulisic and Mauricio Pochettino. So let's get right into it. We spoke to Henry just a moment ago, and we got his thoughts on how everything is going with the U.S. men's national team.
Ladies and gentlemen, when we talk about illustrious guests, none get more illustrious, also more professional. I feel buttoned up. I feel like HR is going to hear about this if we mess up on this one.
When our show gets a little too off the rails, this is the man we call. When we need somebody to talk to the cops, this is the man who's really, you know, helps clean up the place.
Okay? Absolutely. You know, get the riffraff out of here. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Riffraff himself, though, you don't know it. We know him personally. 5'9", he's a bit wilder. Henry Bushnell, everybody, of Yahoo!
Love it.
I will say, I've often been described as professional. I appreciate that. Never illustrious before. So that's a first.
Okay.
Well, welcome.
Add it to your special skills on your resume, Henry. So
I will.
This is an interesting and exciting time. Obviously, a writer for Yahoo Sports, and especially as someone who covers the U.S. men's national team and the women's national team thoroughly, there are few that can provide the insight necessary. So let's immediately just start with, obviously, Trinidad against the U.S., a 5-0 defeat of Trinidad. Obviously, after the constant string of losses and all the drama, a 5-0 result, as you said in your article, provided some relief. But I still think the main talking point of this weekend had nothing to do with the game. It was really about Pochettino and Pulisic and the drama there. So when it came to any press conferences and I saw his response that he had with Paul Tenorio, but What has your summation of this, and how much should we be caring about this?
Oh, I think we got to care about it a lot, both because it's fun and interesting to care about, and also because there is some uncertainty about what the relationship is between Pochettino and what most people agree is the U.S.'s best player right now. And Pulisic kind of played it off, but the fact that he didn't totally play it off and say it was a total non-issue, I think speaks to the fact that maybe they're, you know, it's not the... And look, there's time for it to become a better relationship, but it might not be the best relationship right now. And, you know, because Christian didn't come out and talk about his decision to skip the Gold Cup originally, like, this thing has dragged on and on. And now there's almost, I don't think there's anything that can happen in the Gold Cup group stage that is going to be a bigger story than all this.
I guess my question is then, Henry, whose side is U.S. soccer on?
It's a good question. It's a very good question. I think they're more on Pochettino's side right now because they're paying him $6 million. And they don't pay... Christian gets paid a lot of money, but not by U.S. soccer. Right. So they know they need Christian, and they know that he's going to be key next summer. And, you know, indirectly, they can you know, get a lot of money off of a good performance next summer. But... I think they're probably siding with Poch right now.
Yeah, I mean it's something where a lot of people watch the interview that Christian Pulisic did on call it what you want, right? That's what the show's called. So he's on that show, and we were talking about it before, like that him revealing kind of what happened, that he wanted to play in the two friendlies, and didn't want to play in the Gold Cup. That this was like he didn't need to talk about this, right? And then I think it was a telling statement when Pochettino, in responding to this, he says, I don't want to get into details because it was a private conversation. It looked like he's like, I know that he's the face of this team. I'm not going to throw him under the bus. I'm going to look after him. Not going to say anything, you know, just say he's not available and rest and blah, blah, blah. But Pulisic saying this sounds like he's mad that, or at least frustrated that he wasn't welcome in those two friendlies. And it's there's a lot of like, this could have all been avoided if you just shut up. So for us, I'm like, yeah, more fodder. But for the stability of the national team, I'm like, just shut up. What is the point of talking about this?
But also, like, shut up or come out and talk about it when you made the decision weeks ago. Because what the reason he did this interview with CBS is because there's all these narratives out here that he never told his side. He was never able to tell his side of the story because he never chose to tell his side of the story. He never came out and did an interview at the time. And so, you know, the thing that set all this off was Landon Donovan talking about, you know, Christian, like in the context of Cristiano Ronaldo giving so much to the national team. Yeah. And Christian's probably watching that being like, wait, no, Cristiano Ronaldo went and played two games for Portugal. That's what I offered to do too.
Yeah.
I offered to play. I wanted to come play two friendlies. I didn't want to play a whole month long tournament. That's not what Cristiano Ronaldo and these other guys, you know, some of his teammates at AC Milan that people are comparing him to, that's not what they are doing. So I think he like felt a need to come out and like defend himself a bit.
I mean, he is also 40. Two matches is a month long tournament for a 40-year-old compared to Christian Pulisic.
That's fair. Totally fair.
I guess the question for me becomes, we've heard this narrative and I've always avoided it because I tend to hate when young players are put in this position, especially someone of Christian's career who's had so many managers in such a short period of time and seems that his club career has only now started to settle. I can kind of understand him saying like, bro, let's not ruin a good thing right now with this somewhat meaningless tournament. I'm not putting words in his mouth. That's not how I feel, but maybe that's compared to everything else. The World Cup is coming. I want to be healthy for a career, a club season, and that. But at the same time, I've heard people say, oh, the national team is now Camp Cozy, and it's more of a spa weekend than it is a hard nose, you know, teeth, you know, to the grindstone, whatever all those cliches are, you know, sort of rough. You got to prove your point. You got to earn your spot. That some of these guys feel like their spot's already earned. They don't have to try so hard. And this sort of brings, this adds, you know, exhibit B and C to a lot of those arguments. Do you think that from your experience in talking to them, that maybe this situation here can sort of remove that, can sort of push the national team into a position where every player, regardless of what their name on their back is, or, you know, no one's written in pen, it's all written in pencil. This could push the team to sort of earn their spot a little more.
It could, but also I think there's a, look, what everybody compares it to is like 20 years ago. And I think there's an inescapable dynamic right now where, like, a lot of these guys are in, if you compare it to players 20, 30 years ago who, you know, would fight for the national team, and the national team was everything, and they gave 100% commitment, et cetera, et cetera. Those guys, the national team was like the big thing for them. And a lot of them were playing in MLS where, let's face it, there's not that much pressure to perform in MLS compared to European clubs where relegation is a, you know, a danger. And those guys were playing for the national team because the national team was the biggest stage they had, and they needed that as like a platform to get into Europe and advance their club careers. Whereas now it's the opposite. Like Weston McKennie and Tim Weah are playing, and Christian Pulisic and all these guys are playing in front of 50,000 super passionate fans every week where there's tons of pressure to perform. And it's like the national team has almost become a necessary reprieve from that. They come here, they play in half-empty stadiums, you know, friendlies. And also all of these CONCACAF events have just become kind of repetitive for them, I think. So I don't think you're ever going to reverse that dynamic back to what it used to be, where the national team is the big thing.
They said we need our players playing in Europe, that we need them playing at the highest level. And I guess we didn't realize this was a possible consequence. The clubs are bigger than the national team. I saw a clip of Dax McCarty talking about playing for the, or just commenting about this. And he's like, I've never been in Christian Pulisic's shoes where I could deny a call up to the national team. Jimmy Conrad talks about he had like a serious, a new baby, and he needed to stay home, and he declined one national team call. He wasn't called in nearly 2 years. And this is a privilege. It's a privilege to be able to say no and know that you're still going to be called into the national team. So that does change the heart and the dynamic of the team, because, yes, 20 years ago, it was not like that. It was too important to play for the national team. So it's what an interesting consequence I think we didn't expect about our players playing at the best clubs in Europe.
100%. And now the interesting thing is like, these guys who are getting, you know, the guys who are getting called in now, like Sebastian Berhalter and Max Arfston and all these guys, like they're the Dax McCartys right now, right? Like they're the guys who, of course, they're not going to turn down a call up. Like they are going at this with absolutely everything they have. It's the biggest opportunity of their career. So can we either get the European guys to feed off that and treat the national team as everything? Or are all these Dax McCarty level dudes good enough? Like are they any good? And I think that's the big question of the next 12 months.
Respectfully,
also, right. I also do want to say, like,
hard worker.
For sure. Oh yeah, this is not. Yeah. This is not. We're not. This is not an.
No, Henry, we get it. Like people who are just lucky to even be called up and are nowhere near skilled or qualified. That's what you're saying, right, Henry?
Like Dax McCarty. Okay. Yeah. I mean, obviously, Dax is going to see this, and I have a message for you on MLS.
And he has a lot of time now to respond.
No, but the other thing I did want to point out is like there's a difference between the commitment you show when you get called into a Nations League or a Gold Cup or a friendly camp. And like the World Cup is a bigger level than even what these guys experience on a week-to-week basis at their clubs. And that's the hope, right? That, yeah, they might not care that much about friendlies in the spring or summer of 2025. But when June 2026 hits, like you're going to get full intensity. The issue is that I guess you don't get much time building up to that as a collective with everybody caring. But I think there's a legitimate question about how much that matters. And World Cups are one-off events that anything can happen in. And if you show commitment, like that's what we saw in Qatar. These guys were terrible in the last friendlies before Qatar, and then they were pretty darn good, and they certainly cared in Qatar. So,
well, okay. Henry, when I was young, one of my cousins, who eventually became a doctor, came over the house, and when he left, my mom goes, "Now that's a good son." Now, clearly, that was a shot at me more than it was a compliment to him. Now, Mauricio Pochettino recently said, "Malik Tillman, that's one of the best players we have in the U.S. system, in the whole of USA." Was that a pat on the back from Malik Tillman, who I think absolutely deserves it and has really raised his stock in these last few games, certainly in the last season with PSV? Or was it a little bit of a backhand, a continuation of the back and forth with Christian Pulisic? Or am I reading too much into it?
I think you're reading a bit too much into it. I do think he's been sending messages. I think he's been sending messages over the past, you know, several weeks. Not necessarily specifically about Christian, but about the regulars who, as we've all talked about, are probably a bit too comfortable when they come into the national team. So I think he has been sending that message. But I think this specifically is more so about Malik. Like, I think Malik really is one of the most talented players in the U.S. pool right now, and totally could be a starter at the World Cup in 12 months.
I truly believe he will be the starting 10.
Yeah. I do want to.
He's at a level higher than Gio Reyna right now, for sure.
Sure,
which is crazy.
He gets on the field and plays. So that's the bar isn't too high when it comes to comparing those two. But
yeah, Gio Reyna is the me in this scenario I painted before
versus your cousin. Yeah, I do want to talk about some of the players that are there. I think it's interesting given that the Club World Cup being at the same time as the Gold Cup does present opportunities to some of the players. I think there is a little bit of the results in those friendlies not being totally Pochettino's fault, given that there are players missing due to the Club World Cup, like really important players. But I want to talk about players like Diego Luna and Jack McGlynn, who are playing well. They're increasing their stock. It's an interesting situation. We were trying to predict our 2026 World Cup rosters, and I didn't have Diego Luna on there. I think you didn't either, Alex, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember, but it's an interesting thing, because I still think Gio Reyna is going to come back, and I don't know if I'm crazy, but can Diego Luna and also a player like Jack McGlynn make the squad? We saw the goal that he scored against Turkey, right, if I'm not mistaken. Can these guys actually be there in 2026?
I think at this point Diego Luna is going to be there. Like, just because every time this guy steps, he has not stepped onto the field of the national team and been underwhelming a single time. Like, he has been, he fights, he's been decent on the ball. The game, like, the level has not seemed too high for him. Obviously, the World Cup level is higher than any level he's played at in these friendlies or Nations League games. But he's been proving game after game that he belongs. And the way Pochettino clearly loves him, and he loves the grit and the fight. And like, the combination of grit and creativity is something that I don't think anybody else in the U.S. pool really has. So I think, I don't know that he's going to be a World Cup starter. I don't know how much he'll play, but I think at this point he's absolute, unless he disproves it over the next 12 months, I think he's on the roster. Jack McGlynn is an interesting one because, you know, for a long time, everybody kind of profiled him as like a central midfielder who, he's not super athletic, but he's super technical, great on the ball, like a kind of a deep-lying playmaker type of guy. And suddenly he is playing in the position that Tim Weah usually plays for this national team. And they are completely opposite players. So it's, right? It's interesting. I think there's a chance that he's on the roster. Can he perform and do some of that? I think we've also seen his limitations in the past few games as well, though. Like, he, athletically, I don't know that he's at a World Cup level right now. So he's more of a maybe still on the outside looking in for me, but he's certainly been one of the more impressive players this camp.
I think we kind of all line up on who we think has raised their stock enough to get in that. But you mentioned another player that Christian and I haven't really talked about as much but has had some pretty good performances the last few weeks in Berhalter. Is he good enough? Is he showing enough? Or does he need to make maybe a move to Europe or a higher level than MLS to really solidify even a fringe position for this national team?
Yeah, I don't think he's there quite yet. I think he's been steadily rising in MLS, or maybe not even steadily, like pretty quickly rising in MLS over the past 12, 18 months. But I think he's still got a ways to go. Even like you see it, even yesterday against Trinidad and Tobago, who is not a very good team, to be completely honest. There were a few times where he was getting beat, without the ball in midfield. I don't know that he, and the midfield is just so crowded. The U.S. midfield, when everybody's healthy and available, is just so crowded that I'm not sure that, like, he is, for me at least, I don't know about for Pochettino, but I don't think long-term he's ahead of Tanner Tessman and Aiden Morris and guys like that on the depth chart. But he could be. He could be over the next, in 6 or 8 months, but not right now.
Okay. As far as the game against Trinidad, 5-0, any big takeaway from this game? The next game is against Saudi Arabia, which feels like, we were talking about this before, I believe they're fourth as far as like teams that can win the Gold Cup. So we saw Saudi Arabia in the Gold Cup, but any takeaway from the Trinidad game and then looking forward to Saudi Arabia?
Honestly, I'm not sure there's too many takeaways. I thought, the guys we've talked about were all right, but it's a significant, like, this is that Trinidad team. Remember, 8 years ago or whatever, when we went into that World Cup qualifier that obviously is infamous now, mm-hmm. like everybody was saying that was not a good Trinidad team, and it wasn't a good Trinidad team, but this one is significantly at a worse. Like this is a pretty low level. It's a pretty big rebuilding project right now. So I'm just not sure there's too many takeaways. I thought it was interesting that Matt Freese got the nod in goal. Like, I think Matt Freese is the number one goalkeeper right now over Matt Turner, given Matt Turner's previous performance and given who has gotten the start.
Which is fascinating because just a couple weeks ago, we were at when they revealed the World Cup poster for New York, New Jersey. And we were at this event in New York, and Matt Freese is there with a couple NYCFC players. And I just told him face to face, I'm like, man, it sucks that you didn't get any minutes in the January window. And he's like, yeah, they kind of told me that, given that I was new, that I probably wouldn't get any minutes. And look at where that was just a couple weeks ago, essentially. And now you saying he's probably the number one. We're NYCFC fans, so we see him every week. And it is a shock that it could happen that quickly, but it really does show how quickly things can change when it comes to the national team. You could be, the teacher's favorite student one day, and then somebody else could replace you. But yeah, I that's an interesting shout because, Matt Freese, I think he's deserving of an opportunity. But even then, I told him, like, man, it sucks that you didn't get any minutes. But even now, I'm like, oh, slow down. All right, are you sure you're ready? Like, I want to, like, take care of him.
Hilarious. Can you tell he's a dad, Henry?
Maybe this is too much too soon, You don't have to smoke the entire pack of cigarettes. I was just trying to make a point.
But it is. It's also, I think it speaks to the fact, maybe a better way to put it is that there is no number one goalkeeper right now. Right, like, right. That spot is kind of vacant, and we've got a bunch of number twos and threes. And we're hoping that one of them becomes the number one over the next 12 months, but nobody's really at that level right now, which is such a departure from, like 10 years ago, we had like two or three number ones. We had Tim Howard and Brad Guzan and others who were kind of pushing for that spot. And now it's totally open going into the World Cup.
Henry, maybe you can help me make heads or tails of one of the most frustrating things with this national team. And that's Patrick Adjumang. Like, I sound like one of my school teachers. I can see the potential, but he's just not living up to it. I can see these flashes of brilliance in these ways where I'm like, oh, he can do stuff. he seems to take some talents of multiple potential starters in the nine position that we have on our roster, and he seemingly can do two things that two players can do within one. But then he misses wide open headers and, you know, situations where I'm like, that player worked so hard to get that ball to you and you didn't take care of it well enough. And is this a player where we're going to be looking at and say, I maybe was born a year too late to make it to this World Cup squad? Or am I just not seeing the forest through the trees?
I think he's just, he's been on such a meteoric rise in his whole career, not just with the national team, but when you look at his background, that each of these levels, like including, you know, the MLS level a couple of years ago when he first broke into MLS, is a significant step up for him. And I think that's what you're seeing with the national team. And sometimes when you when you play at a level that you've never played at before, like, I think he's certainly shown that he can hang physically at this level, but when the game speeds up, it just, like, it messes with your soccer brain. And there are things that are just that you're comfortable doing in MLS week in and week out that are suddenly not automatic, and also are magnified, right? Like, I think it was even yesterday, he missed a header that was a pretty clean header 6 yards out. In MLS, like, yeah, okay. Like, no fans are talking about that because it's a smaller stage. But here, people are going to notice that. And there are fewer national team games. So I think he's still got potential, but he's certainly not polished enough to get World Cup minutes right now, I'd say. But we'll see. You know, he's a late bloomer for sure, and is still improving. So, you know, maybe come next March, we're having a different conversation.
Yeah. I mean, it was evident, like, in against Trinidad, like, his strength is his strength. You see him physically try to impose, and you're like, oh man, I was watching, and I'm like, just why didn't you do this against Switzerland, bro? Like, why? Mm-hmm. But it's like the quality of defender is just so much higher that they kind of neutralize that part of his game. But yeah. Look, that win was provided some much needed optimism for the national team. So hopefully this Gold Cup continues to show some good performances. This game against Saudi Arabia, I think, is going to be a big test. Obviously, it's not a friendly up against a good team, and yeah, they're still boasting about that win against Argentina. So I'm sure it's going to be a contentious game to say the least. Well, Henry Bushnell of Yahoo Sports, thank you so much for hanging with us. Everybody, go check out you can just Google Henry Bushnell Yahoo Sports. You'll see all his articles. Read his work. He's one of the best in this business. So Henry, thank you so much for taking time, bro.
Appreciate you guys.
Welcome back to the show. Henry Bushnell, the greatest. You guys know it. He hates doing our show because we make him look a little bit more unprofessional, and that's my fault. Let's talk a little bit about what we saw on Friday or on Saturday with the Mexican national team, the quite possibly one of the best teams in CONCACAF, losing by winning 3-2 against DR.
Yeah.
Does this, for the Mexican fans, this felt... You know, Mexican fans are upset when they're giving a lot of credit to the Dominican national team and they're saying how well they played. I've never seen the Mexican national team play five at the back versus a Spanish-speaking Caribbean opponent. This has major implications for the Mexican national team.
Yeah, this is... I loved it all. I mean, if you're watching...
I can tell from the shirt you're wearing, buddy.
You see, I'm wearing the new... Dominican Republic national team kit, which is a everybody wants. So for all the people that are messaging me and DMing me, I will do my best to try to find out where you can get them, but they will be available somewhere.
Again, I don't know why you put this on yourself. If you would have just taken a picture of the QR code and replied with that, you would have been much easier. I don't know why you're doing all this extra work for no reason.
The issue is that there weren't any available. So,
but
like,
there were more.
Just...
That guy, the salesperson, should be handling this, not you.
But there were people reaching out. I just felt a duty and a responsibility as a Dominican. I'm like, because I was looking for this jersey for years And I know how hard it is to get it, so I completely understood.
You know somebody, what? If you want the jersey, the Dominican jersey, go to our Patreon. Sign up for our Patreon.
We'll look out for you. So, from the DR perspective, yes, this is obviously the first two goals ever scored in the Gold Cup. Obviously, first time qualifying, and you could tell from the beginning, even before the game, my TikTok and all the feeds, Mexican fans being like, if the Mexican national team doesn't win 4-0, then this is a failure for the Mexican national team. The DR is ranked 139th in FIFA versus Mexico's 17th. This should have been which I think most people expected. Your first ever Gold Cup game is against Mexico for a team that historically has not really focused and prioritized the sport of soccer. And how proud are Dominicans afterwards? Where there's a lot of pride with DR, even Dominicans being like, we should have won the game, or we should at least drew. And Mexican fans, we had friends that were at the game. Shout out to Yusuf Ricard from NYCFC Forever Pod. He was at the game and he was like, I can't believe how much they're booing their own team. Obviously, the game is in SoFi in Los Angeles. It's home field advantage.
This is very much a home game for the Mexican national team.
Okay, yeah. The Dominicans are in a lot of places, but we can't necessarily compete with Los Angeles.
Right.
All right?
If me and Christian were going to have a debate and I picked Lindstry, that's basically this game for the Mexican national team.
Right, right. You win on that topic. I'm not too...
it doesn't matter what the topic is. It's a home field advantage for me. I think Dominican perspective... You weren't just happy to be there, and that was beautiful to see. This was a team that came to compete. I want to give credit to the coach who set this team up really well. This wasn't a bunker down, 10 behind the ball, hope we get into space. This was attacking at moments centrally, effectively going at the back line of the Mexican national team, so much so that better players had to come in. You know, we talked about Chino Huerta, who I think is one of the best, one of the most dynamic players on the Mexican national team right now. He needed to come in. And he absolutely helped settle this team a little bit more. He was much more of a threat offensively. Yeah. But they didn't have much of a threat before that. They had moments where they were very clearly, right? Raul Jimenez and Santi Jimenez, I think, are learning to play together. But there were moments where you're like, they need someone else on this pitch. They need more service. Against the Dominican national team, and I think this is a good point to talk about the Mexican national team in the sense of, you know, we wondered over the last few months, where are they? And I think the Mexican fans, you could see that tension. You could find, you know, obviously they're booing their team. You could feel that it feels negative still. It feels like they haven't gotten themselves out of this rut. And this game, even though it's a victory, did nothing to state that they are out of this rut.
Yeah, because, I mean, look, and they just won Nations League. So you would think that there would be still a little bit of positivity bleeding into this Gold Cup. But there's just something with... They looked at the opponent and they said, these are Dominicans. This shouldn't be a serious competition. this should be something where we let them know where they stand in terms of this sport. And they were genuinely surprised as to like what the competition level was like. But Raul Jimenez, to me, was the best player on the pitch. And if it wasn't for the two set-piece goals that Mexico scored, which shows the difference in quality for these two teams, right? Like, you can't Edson Alvarez's goal, the first one, was a proper defender marks them, right? Like,
well,
and they know
the defender jumped away from goal.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not what you want to do.
He's like behind him. It's like he gave Edson Alvarez way too like good of good position.
But he also didn't put himself between Edson Alvarez and the goal, which is where you want to be.
Exactly. So you can see that's where kind of the difference was. But if DR was better in set pieces, they could have won this game. Like that's where the kind of like the differences the differences were.
Am I overplaying this by saying balompié be football?
Well, you were talking about Raul Jimenez and Santi Jimenez looking a little bit better playing together, but Santi missed like a pretty good chance, I think it was in the first half, I don't remember. But as I'm watching it, I'm like, thank God, thank the heavens that Santi Jimenez is wearing a Mexico national team jersey right now, because this is our best opportunity to actually maybe get a point in this game. So they had a lot of issues. I think there was also the clouding what clouded Mexico in a lot, and a little bit of drama was not obviously the protests, the ICE protests were happening outside the stadium, but then the coach Javier Aguirre, his comments, I don't have them in front of me, but he didn't speak very supportive of the Mexican community in Los Angeles.
It almost came across as like he was indifferent to what was happening.
Yeah, he was just like, oh, this isn't my issue. I'm just a coach and blah blah blah. And that put a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths, because it's like you're the coach of the Mexican national team, and you see that Mexicans are being targeted in Los Angeles, and you're just gonna kind of like sit on the fence on this one. It was pretty bad. And then
if you're gonna sit on the fence, I hope it's Pickett.
Okay. All right. Whatever you're into.
I just hope it hurts, if that's how you're gonna react to that.
So I think, look, Mexican fans, it's interesting seeing the discourse now, because it's actually, I think, a little bit positive in that they're not just shitting on their own team. They're praising Dominican Republic.
Yeah, but I don't think you understand the Mexican fan base well enough to know that them praising their opponent is another way of giving shade, throwing shade at their national team.
Yeah. So, but at the very least, I'm sure it elicits a different emotion that they're not particularly.
You just like it because you're Dominican. You're like, look at me, I'm getting praised from other soccer people. So, okay, look, obviously there's been a lot of conversation about Club World Cup, but I think these first few matches are incredible. So let's go around the league. Let's talk about Club World Cup. First match, PSG absolutely destroyed Atletico Madrid in a way that I did not think I'd be saying that sentence. Even though I think PSG are favorites, I thought Atletico would be much more up for this game.
Yeah, watching the game, honestly, the first thing that was really, really impressive, the game was at the Rose Bowl. I believe it was sold out. There were a lot of people.
There was
like
a lot of people.
People.
If there were empty seats, there was minimal. This was very well attended.
We obviously heard a lot of the narratives around Club World Cup and not being able to move tickets and stuff like that. But that was quite the introduction to the tournament. The other thing that, as I'm watching it, I was just like, bro, what's the temperature? It must be hot. It must be pretty damn hot.
Yeah.
It was like 85 degrees, and you would imagine on the pitch, you know, it probably was a little bit warmer. But that's probably why I was thinking, like, the team that is like fitter and can handle, like, you were just playing in Europe, and obviously it's much cooler there. And to go to Los Angeles and play in that heat, I thought it felt a little bit like Atletico Madrid just like, they weren't up for the game. And there's a little bit of, you're watching this game, you're watching Club World Cup in general, and you can see what teams are really taking it seriously. What stadiums are really taking it seriously. What, like, you know, what you're watching the Sounders game, there were less people there than the Sounders game. So it felt a little bit, you know, like I think this will ramp up by like the second, third game. Once teams have a real stronger chance of like getting out of the group, I think we'll see the intensity. I thought the Al Ahly Inter Miami game was also fascinating in that there weren't that many pink shirts.
No, dude, that was an Al Ahly event. And I don't know if you've seen, a lot of teams have sort of taken over Times Square, Palmeiras, Esperance from Tunisia. A lot of these teams have, like, clearly people have either who live here and are fans of these teams, but it also feels like a lot of people have traveled in for this. So it felt more like a party. And I think Inter Miami versus Al Ahly was your first sign that, like, oh, there ain't no home field advantage for these MLS teams, bro.
Right. We got a lot of Egyptians out here in the U.S., which is dope. That is, I think, where we're all going to be kind of surprised in seeing, like, you know, there was a game, I believe, Porto and Palmeiras at MetLife. And it was like, all Palmeiras. And that is a pleasant kind of thing to see of, like, which fan bases really, really show out. You know, I had seen a clip from, like, Argentinian television about, you know, what would you sacrifice for River Plate fans? Like, what would you sacrifice if they could win the Club World Cup? And some people were like, oh my God, I would sacrifice everything, blah, blah, blah. And then one guy was like, you know, I want Libertadores more than this or whatever. So it's on everybody.
You win a lot more money for winning this than Libertadores. I think so. I mean, we have to confirm that, but
I think so. I'm pretty sure.
Let's talk a little bit about this because we mentioned Inter Miami versus Al Ahly, which ended 0-0. But of course, you know, Inter Miami's goalkeeper had to stand on his head in order for that to be the case. And we wonder where their level is, right? And I'm starting to wonder, Seattle falls a little bit short against Botafogo, but for a large part, we're holding their own, right? Yeah. We got Inter Miami lucky to walk away with a 0-0 draw. I'm starting to wonder if MLS should have done something to alleviate some of the depth issues that you typically have, where maybe this doesn't matter as much within MLS because everyone's playing under the same rules. But when you walk into a competition where finally we're at an advantage, MLS teams are in the middle of their season. They're in form. This isn't end of the season or preseason where they're not in form. And yeah. like all the other, you know, international competitions that MLS teams are taking part of, this is in our own country. This is in midseason. MLS teams should be walking in with the most capability to win this. And yet you see that the MLS rules are stopping these teams from allowing them to really have a chance at this competition. Do you think that MLS should have changed their cap rules, at least just for this competition, for the teams in MLS in the Club World Cup?
My instinct is to say yes, because...
Finally, dude. Finally. Because, I thought Christian was going to say no.
No. My instinct
rules
is to say yes,
are the rules. That's Christian's motto.
Because it would have added an element of like, you know, players, teams being like, I got this. Like slapping you know, like I declare war, like you slap a card down there, like, oh, you didn't think I had, or like Uno, yeah. like boom. Like, I
bro,
think
we all know you think about Pokemon cards. Stop lying to us. Uno.
Okay? I know. I'm just letting you know how I play Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, damn.
So, Yu-Gi-Oh, bro, let's go. Anyway. So I think the, it would have provided an exciting little thing because that is what's happening with the other teams, especially the European clubs, South American clubs. They're like, oh, this guy's here. He just signed a couple days ago. Yeah. And blah blah blah. Like that would have been fun. But I guess the challenge here would have been that does the player stay with the roster for the rest of the season? I know LAFC signed somebody. They were allowed to sign one guy or something like that.
Yeah, but imagine if it didn't matter. It wasn't a cap hit. And they were only signed on a 30-day contract.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been pretty wild and fun. You would also think that it's a huge risk with a player that has not played with the team or trained with the team. But, you know, credit to the Sounders.
It doesn't have to be like a superstar starter. We could be talking about defensive backups. We could be talking about maybe loan a player from someone else on MLS. You know?
Like FIFA Ultimate Team, you know what I mean? Like you,
right? Imagine they play for the same country. You get that little green line. That's pretty great.
So but credit to the Sounders. They played Botafogo. This obviously watching. I tried to watch the MLS Club World Cup matches a little bit more intently, and I thought they held their own. If Nuhu doesn't push that dude and get a yellow card, and that essentially sets up a free kick for Alex Telles, who's, I mean, a brilliant left foot.
We saw him at Old Trafford when we saw Manchester United versus Arsenal. Yeah.
And if Nuhu doesn't do that, I think this game is at the very least a draw. They held their own. I thought watching Sounders against a Brazilian team, I was expecting a little bit of like, oh, they're going to bring all the flashiness and blah, blah, blah. And Sounders, I thought tactically were the better team. And I don't watch the Brazilian league regularly. I don't know what the style of play is for a lot of the teams. But I thought the Sounders were more sound, no pun intended. And they were... okay. And they played with a comfort and poise. I thought they... made a few mistakes in the midfield, but overall, I thought they were good. I knew who I thought was having a fantastic game. If he doesn't do that, he could possibly have been man of the match. He was, I guess there was a winger that was on him whenever he had the ball, and he literally was like, "You're too slow. You're too slow to keep up with me." So he would like, he did this like four or five times in the game. He would tap the ball a little bit forward to give the defender, meaning that like the winger, like a thought that like maybe you'll get there, and he's just like physically moving him out of the way. He's like, "You're not gonna keep up with me."
It's a big boy game, bro. You gotta get the weight up.
they gave up two goals on headers. But I really liked how the Sounders played. I know we were talking about games I'm excited to see, and I said Sounders PSG. But I think PSG and Botafogo are two very different teams. But I think if Sounders continue to play with this like level of poise, I mean, maybe they're not winning, but I still think they can like hold their own and compete.
Yeah, you are. You have. I think you got a head injury every time you talk about this. But oh, sure. But I think Botafogo is maybe a level. I said they're probably one of the favorites. I think they can put it together. But very clearly, there were moments where Seattle could compete with them. One of the things that stood out to me most is, you know, look, I love technology, but the body cam from the refs.
Yeah.
I think this is something that should be instituted all leagues immediately. This was great. There's four pieces of technology that they've instituted, right? So we talked about body cam, which is, I think, incredible. It's used in the broadcast. It gives you a great idea to see what the perspective of the referee is. It's not where the referee is looking, but it's essentially what's happening directly in front of the referee. But it's a wide enough sort of fisheye lens, kind of gives you a much closer detail of what it looks like on the pitch versus from the sideline, which is where most camera angles are. You get live VAR feeds for stadium fans, which I thought was incredible. The fans now know what's going on, which is something that happens a lot more in American sports. We're willing to show the fouls. We're willing to show the play. Where in Europe, they don't do that because they don't want to stoke any anger, which is ridiculous. Everyone's angry already. AI offside detection, so semi-automated or fully automated offside, which again, the technology works. I get that it's expensive. I don't know why every league hasn't instituted it yet. But also, this is interesting. The other piece of technology is no more paper substitution slips. Did you know about this?
I did not know
that.
The
teams are now using tablets to say who their subs are. So the fourth official is no longer receiving a piece of paper in time to get in to the clock he holds over his head. It is now being received via tablet. So once it's input, everyone knows what's happening. It's no longer little notes. You know what I mean? Which have gotten coaches like Petke in trouble in the past. Sure. What are your thoughts on the technology so far? I think I don't really care so much about the tablet, but I think that's technology that's pretty easy to institute. But for me, offside, fully automated or semi-automated offside, let's get it going. And I love the body cam and explaining to everyone. Everyone can see what VAR is seeing.
Yeah, I mean, the body cam is, you know, and we've sort of seen it before, like we saw it in the MLS All-Star game in 2017 or 18 in Chicago. That was the first time I really remember seeing it. But this is in a competitive game. It adds especially the new who foul, where when I saw it through the regular broadcast, I'm like, oh, come on. Why does he get a yellow? It wasn't that big a deal. Like, yeah, he pushed them, but it wasn't that big a deal. And then you see it from the body cam 10 feet away, like where the ref is. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, it seemed a little aggressive. Yeah. So it adds a level of context and a piece of sports that we're not used to getting, right? Like the first person view, whereas it feels like Call of Duty, right?
Mm-hmm.
So getting to see that, and we're watching on the zone, and it immediately like cuts right to it. It adds a level of context to the game because it's easy to be like, oh, the ref is blind, he didn't see that, or blah blah blah. Why did he miss that? Why did he give a yellow? And then you see the first person, and it's like, oh, okay, I kind of see why he may have missed it. I kind of see why he maybe thought it was that way, because you're literally seeing it from their perspective. So I do hope it's something that they can institute more and more leagues. Because it's fun.
I wouldn't even go on a limb and say, I think it makes refs' job safer. I think it makes it a little bit easier to be a referee because it's not so much that, well, here's what I saw and what I saw is 100% true. Now I get to see what they saw. And like you're talking about a prime example where watching on TV, you're like, oh, come on. And then you go to body cam and you're like, oh, that's what it looked like from that side.
Now
you're getting a camera directly in the middle. It's like as if a Insta360 was running around the pitch. You'd get a better shot. These things are used so much more. Different angles, I should say, are used so much more in NBA and NFL, where I think as fans of American sports, we're so much more familiar with all these multiple angles. Where when it comes to soccer, it's very much like four or five positions along the barrier of the stadium. And you're like, this opens up the conversation a lot more to be like, no, look at what the refs saw. I think it makes their job safer.
Sure. I mean, you sound like you, you're advocating for body cams for the police as well. Like,
yeah, it was like, imagine players are shining flashlights into the body cam.
But interestingly enough, I think us being more used to and conditioned to body cams on police officers has made it so whenever there's conflict, we can see their perspective and decide whether we agree with their decision or not. And yeah. with referees, it's really no different. I don't know, and we know
a referee got it wrong if they shut the body cam off.
Why you delete
the footage?
So you know, it's some shady refs out there. Uh-huh. All right, so some people are gonna be like, it's just one bad apple. Doesn't mean they're all bad refs.
The thin black and white line of silence.
Okay, we got to change the culture of the referees, bro. But no, it is something that when I first saw it in the broadcast, you know, that it's kind of difficult to be. We've watched so much soccer throughout our lives that it's almost difficult to be surprised. So
this was one of those moments, though.
Well, I think I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, this is nice. I kind
of
like this.
I also, it's one of the pieces of technology where I'm like, okay, no one could argue this. This helps everybody. This helps the refs. This helps the fans. This helps the players. Everyone, we're all on board. You know what I mean? The only people who hate this are like, the guys are like, we shouldn't even be on TV. You know? It should be factory workers playing each other. Those are the only people who could be upset. There's so much more to talk about. We got transfer roundup. We got so much more. Come back after this.
Welcome back, everybody. Let's get to some transfer roundup and talk about some of the transfers that have already happened this window. And let's start with Arsenal. Arsenal, the rumors are that Benjamin Sesko and Victor Gyökeres, like they're trying to decide between these two guys as to sign a desperately needed striker. So, Alexis, as the Arsenal fan, who would you prefer?
First of all, there's two things at hand, right? One, yes. Pick one. I don't care if you flip a coin. I don't care what you do. I actually think I think Benjamin Sesko, as much as I think he is a first-time merchant in a way, he is super fast, super skilled with the ball, and I think he has a higher ceiling, and that's the player that I think we should be going after. If you're Arsenal, I think he will be one of the best center forwards in the world, and I think Victor Gyökeres, I think will not be the same player that he was at Sporting Club when he goes up against better competition. I think you saw that at moments in Champions League. But both of them are better than not having a striker, which is how we tried to get through Champions League this year, especially with the injuries that Arsenal suffered. So go get one of them, build around them, get someone who can score goals, please. And then replace Martinelli, which is second important. But also, why are Arsenal taking so long to sign players? This is why we brought in a new sporting director. And it's the same thing. It's the old Arsene Wenger way of waiting so long. I hate this. Just make a decision, go after your guy, and get it done.
Yeah. I mean, between the two, the only the positive for Sesko is his age. He's 22 versus Gyökeres is 27, if I'm not mistaken. So there's a little bit, maybe you're getting a more polished striker. Maybe for the short term, it might be a good move. Gyökeres, I don't see how either of them can go wrong, but if I had to pick, I would take the risk. It's not a tremendous risk, but Gyökeres feels like he seems like he's ready right now.
Yeah, I think there's a level that each of them are going to step up, but for some reason, I think Benjamin Sesko feels more like an Arteta signing, feels more like a player that fits in Arteta's system versus Gyökeres. But again, I don't care if it's Ollie Watkins. Sign somebody.
Right. I mean,
get it done.
Out of those three, I would pick Ollie Watkins.
Yeah, yeah. Well, stop it. You're absolutely smoking. Something's going on in that house. I think there's a carbon monoxide leak in whatever room you're in. Let's go to Italian national team. It's not necessarily a transfer, but they brought in Gattuso as their new manager. This could be a powder. This feels like you're throwing a pit bull in a chicken coop. But okay, what are your thoughts on this? Do you think this is the right move for Italy?
I mean, sometimes maybe good and sometimes maybe
right, you know? Which is funny because remember when I said that on CBS and I got in a lot of trouble? This was the scenario.
Not Yahoo Sports, bro. We can say whatever.
We can say whatever the f- we want on here.
Even though they bleeped us multiple times.
Even though we made Carter's job a little bit harder. But if you remember that scenario, we were talking about Patrick Vieira potentially becoming the men's national team coach. And Nico said, oh, well, just because you won a World Cup doesn't make you a great coach. He's like, what about Gattuso? He won a World Cup. And how did he do as a manager? And I said, sometimes maybe because of those. Literally the scenario we talked about.
Yeah. When NYCFC had the 10-year event and you hosted it with Andrea Pirlo.
Yes.
And there was a Q&A section, and there was a fan that asked Pirlo about the Italian national team and Italy in general, about producing talent and like how they've kind of underperformed the last couple of years. And I thought he was going to respond with like, yeah, it's bad right now, but like, you know, there's improvement and we're trying to find good players.
You thought he would like, answer the way someone from like Bensonhurst would answer, which is like, what are you talking about? It's just a little divot now, but we're fine. We're Italy.
He was like, no, the Italian national team is bad. We're not producing players. And it's, he couldn't really even explain why. I don't know what is going on. Because when it comes to like the U.S., you realize like, we have the talking, it's pay to play or blah, blah, blah. And we have the things you can say. He was just like, I don't know what's going on. It's like, everybody's just not good. We're not developing quality players anymore.
Maybe they're drinking wine too early.
Maybe.
Too early
They just need to shift the wine schedule a little bit.
Hold on. I think this is the first Southern Italian manager for the national team.
Okay. So I believe so.
I think he's the first person from the Campania region, from the Napoli region, to be the manager, which culturally in Italy, that is a significant thing.
Okay.
Is huge.
Is he fiery? He's a fiery Southern Italian.
I think we all know the answer to that.
Is that why they have been excluded from those opportunities?
Well, let me tell you something. This team will be running. I know sure.
They are at the risk of missing the World Cup. So they need they have a game coming up.
I forgot who they play too.
Is it Norway? It might be Norway.
Whatever. There is a road by which they don't qualify for the 48 team World Cup. So Italy, get it together. Three World Cups in a row you don't qualify for is crazy.
They have Estonia next, which you would expect a win.
You
but right
don't
now,
win that.
Right now in the group, it's Norway at one, and they get an automatic qualification to the World Cup. And then two, of all teams, a European nation that we all know, Israel, is in second. So we understand the embarrassment of Italy missing World Cups. But if Italy misses an opportunity for the World Cup and Israel moves on to the next, like a playoff stage or something like that, it is... And we know how Italians feel about Israel as well. There's a lot of, obviously, a lot of things a lot of big narrative.
Yeah.
But it would be embarrassing to a new degree that I think people are not used to. So
second round of a group in the World Cup? If Israel and Iran get into the same group, it would be crazy.
Interesting matchup.
Yeah, we're going to do that when behind closed doors. Let's talk a little bit about Garnacho.
No sky cams. No sky cams.
A lot of body cams.
We need plenty, yeah.
Let's talk about the Premier League, because someone we thought was going to be a star has sort of fizzled as of late, but he wants to stay in the Premier League, even though Manchester United are kind of on the outs with him. Alejandro Garnacho wants to stay in the Premier League. I can't figure out what team is going to sign him. Do you have any idea where you think he might go?
I don't know where he might go. Wherever he does go will be a better situation than he's currently in. I really feel like Ruben Amorim has, and this is the negative about Ruben Amorim. He did it with Rashford. You know, he scolds, he punishes players that are not up to his standard, which I understand. Like, you know, if they're not doing the things that the coach requires of them, but he hurts the stock of players by kind of doing this. They don't, and this is probably Manchester United as a whole, but Garnacho is a player that the promise was really there, and in the last few months, it's just been like, you know, that he has problems off the pitch, and he's maybe a distraction, or he's not as professional as the coach wants him to be. So it's going to affect what kind of team he goes. He's just like, when you think of it, just a Manchester United player that just really, really used to mean a lot, that you came from there and that club wanted you, but to like kind of discard him like this, I think it's going to affect even what teams would want him.
I kind of disagree. I kind of like this because I think back to the Sir Alex Ferguson days when rumors would be coming out about Wayne Rooney, you know, being in a car with a side piece and getting in an accident, or you know, rumors of something with a granny, or you know, other players, you know, getting a lot of the stuff that they did on the pitch thrown in the press, and they would, you know, be silent on it and just play through it. This is actually like a good sign, I think, for the future of Manchester United, which is if you come here and you don't have your head on straight and you don't take this seriously, it's going to hurt the potential. Alejandro Garnacho, a year ago, we're talking about him going to whatever club he wants in the world. Right now, the two rumors are Arsenal, which seems to have kind of already gone away. And right now, it looks like it's Aston Villa. Aston Villa would have never been able to get Alejandro Garnacho a year ago. Would have been, the value of this player would have been so high. So this goes to show, if you're a player, if you're a young player in particular, and you show up and you don't take this serious, this is going to hurt your stock. And yeah, Manchester United, financially, maybe they can't take that much of a loss. But overall, they can handle not getting super high value for some of these players that aren't living up to the standard. This actually might set the player straight a little bit in a way, in a reverse way. But I get your point, which
I think
this is crazy.
I think he should go to La Liga. I mean, I know he wants to stay in the Premier League, but I think he would do great in La Liga. But sure. I mean,
I can see him at Real Sociedad for sure.
Sure. I mean, there's a. I mean, he'd be great at Everton. We need a left winger. That would be lovely, but I doubt that's a realistic destination for a player like him.
What about Matthias Tell? He made the move permanent to Tottenham. Tottenham now go out and get Thomas Frank. They go out and get Matthias Tell, who's obviously a great player. What are your thoughts on this? You think they're going to be a good match?
When he signed in the January window, I was genuinely pretty impressed with Tell. I thought he fit in to the Premier League pretty well. And he's very aggressive and attacking. And he chose to go there, right? He had other options to go to different teams. And so I think it's a good fit. And he seems, obviously he's going to be playing in Champions League. I think it's an easy decision if Tottenham are in Champions League.
Yeah, there's no question.
But right.
Thomas Frank, I think he's so versatile. And he's willing to change his tactics so much for the opponent that they have that I almost don't know if this is a good fit or not. Like, I think we have to wait to see what Tottenham looks like. I think if we're talking about Ange Postecoglou, I think he had a few good games, certainly. But Ange is like a different animal. We know what he's going to do. No one really knows what Thomas Frank is exactly going to bring to Tottenham.
Right. Yeah, it's a whole new stage for him.
They're probably going to defend a little more. I think I know that.
Sure. I'm curious to see what this team looks like under Thomas Frank as well. So the one thing I did want to mention that we didn't get to, we were talking about Manchester United, but Mateus Cunha is also official. So he is officially a Manchester
That's
United
true.
Player. I saw the notification not too long ago. So that is going to be I think Manchester United, if all works out well, they could be the Napoli of the Premier League, right? Maybe not win the title, but as far as, you know, Napoli didn't make Champions League, they weren't playing European competitions, they could focus on just the league, and maybe this is what will help Manchester United, just not being in European competitions, focus on improving, bring some stability, and if Amorim can't do that in this year, in this season, then you got to move on, right? There's no way it can continue like this with just poor performances and drama to come with.
The way the financial situation is at Manchester United, they need to be in Champions League and they need to go far in Champions League. So if they have to take the season to correct course, fine. But I don't think he even makes it to the end of the season if it's not looking like they're going to be a Champions League holdout or you know, a stable Champions League position throughout the season. And I don't know if that's going to happen with the level of competition around them rising. Everyone seems to be getting better if that are taking it serious. Not like your Everton's or whatever, but most of the teams are getting better.
Yeah, that's fair.
Are getting better. And I think it's going to make things a little bit more difficult for them. So it's interesting to see if Mateus Cunha and maybe they move on from Garnacho, if those are like good signs for Manchester United. So that's it, man. This was a fun episode. I know you haven't been feeling all that great.
But still crushed it. Still brought the heat.
Bro,
you
brought the heat, bro. Just like DR brought to, you know what I mean? We didn't win, but we did a good job on this episode.
Okay.
Obviously, thank you to Henry Bushnell. Thanks for coming in and making this show just feel a little bit more professional, a little bit more journalistic.
Yeah, we need that. We need that from time to time. But,
absolutely. If you're watching and you're enjoying, please click the subscribe button. What's stopping you? You got this far in an episode. You know what I mean? Why not? Hit the subscribe button. Hit the like button. Comment. What's your favorite color? Comment right now. Put that in the comments. Let us know. Christian, real quick, what's your favorite color?
Black people.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. That's what all thinking. Please. Color on the Pantone scale. Do not put people in the comments.
I think YouTube might filter those. I don't know.
We will have no comments or show left. So that won't be fun. So again, click all the buttons, hit the bell, do everything you're supposed to do. Thank you so much to Henry Bushnell. Thank you so much to Yahoo Sports. Thank you so much to us. Shouts to us in the end. Love you guys. Peace.